2006, the National Education Association did a study, and 50% of teachers quit the profession within 5 years, and that was partially due to low pay.
This is Teaching, Learning, Leading, K-12, Episode 39, and today I'm talking with Danny Kofke about financial wisdom. Danny is a self-made millionaire. He is a former teacher who is married to a teacher. He's also author of 3 books on financial advice. His first one, called How to Survive on a Teacher's Salary. His second one, A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, and his most recent, A Bright Financial Future, Teaching Kids About Money Pre-K through College for Lifelong Success. As a note, his 10-year-old daughter, Ava, is also an author. She wrote The Financial Angel. What a cool family this is. Just wait, this show is full of useful knowledge for educators, parents, and kids alike.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. We provide resources and ideas to assist you in working with the kids. This show is published and produced weekly and is interview-based, but sometimes the shows are simply me looking at a topic in depth and detail. If there is a topic you would like me to look into for a future podcast, please let me know at smoleto.hg@gmail.com. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week. I hope that you will share us with colleagues, friends, and family. And most of all, I'm wishing you the very best and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, everybody. It's Steve Mileto back here with Teaching, Learning, Leading, K-12. And today I got with me Danny Kofke. Say hi, Danny.
Hey, thanks so much for listening, everyone.
Cool. Glad you could join me today. Danny is a teacher. He's an author. He's a father. And he's a financial guru. And he's getting ready to tell us a little bit about himself. And we're going to learn a lot from him. So, Danny, why don't you start off by simply just tell us a little bit about your background.
All right. Well, I started off as a kindergarten teacher, and then I moved, taught first grade, second grade. My wife and I actually taught overseas for 2 years in Krakow, Poland, and then came back to the States. And for the past 8 years, I was a special education teacher, taught severe, profound special needs students. And just recently, right after Labor Day of this year, I got into a different job, and now I'm still kind of a teacher, but now I get to teach teachers on how to manage money.
Oh, now that's cool. So, all right, so you teach teachers how to manage money. Now, first, before we go there, I got to ask you a question, because you just said something that I didn't realize. Uh-huh. You taught in Poland?
I did,
so
yes.
You got to say something about that before we go.
Right. So my wife and I, we had a pretty fast courtship. We met in August. We were engaged in December, married in June, and then we were living in Poland within 1 year of knowing each other. So really fast. But while we were dating, we were engaged at that time, and Tracy was a teacher, and I was doing my student teaching. That's how we met. And she said, "Would you ever be interested in going overseas or doing anything like that?" And at that time, I think I was 24, so didn't really know much, naive American. I'm like, sure, why not? So we went to a hiring fair, and we went through a committee called, or a company called International School Services. So then we went to this big hiring fair in Boston, and I mean, there are American international schools from countries from Afghanistan all the way to Zimbabwe. I mean, it's just crazy. So we interviewed with a couple. We got offered jobs in Bahrain, which on the Persian Gulf at that time, we just didn't feel comfortable. We interviewed with a school in Nigeria, and then a school in Krakow, Poland. They liked us, and they offered us jobs. And that's kind of, we wanted to try to be in Europe just because to go and explore. But a lot of the countries like Spain, England, they didn't pay very well because, hey, everyone wants to go to Spain and England. but in Poland, this was shortly, 2000 is when we went. So about 10 years removed from communist rule. So the cost of living was still really low. And we still made what we would have made in the States. So it was just a really, really neat experience for us. And the class sizes, I taught a K-1 class there. I had 12 kids in my class. And it was just amazing the teaching I could get done. And then growing with each other as a husband and wife. We traveled to 10 countries. So it was just a really neat experience. So if there are any teachers out there listening, I would highly recommend it. If you have a sense of adventure, international teaching, it really, really is rewarding and it's a fun experience.
That's too cool. I had, when I was a classroom teacher, I actually had created a, she was supposed to be my student teacher, and then she gives me a call and says, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be able to be your student teacher, but I am in Japan now, and I was wondering if you want to start a, we could do pen pals or something, and maybe do an exchange out of with our kids. And so I ended up doing a 3-year exchange program with kids. Nice. With Japan out of something like that. And I always thought it was cool because I could not imagine just making that decision to go, because that's kind of what you just described, as there was some company that she and her future husband or fiance decided to go look at teaching English in Japan, and
right.
And they did something similar.
There's a lot of opportunities. And, you know, if you had kids, it would have been a lot harder. And I don't know. I mean, that's part of the reason we moved back. Right. But if you have a teacher maybe towards the end of your career and your kids are older or you're just starting off, it's a wonderful experience. And it's a way to make some more money too. If you go to some of the hardship places, our principal, our first year in Poland, actually then went to Sudan, which wow. I wouldn't have gone, but she was banking over $100,000 a year because not many people want to go there. So, I mean, if you have a sense of adventure and you you can make some money too.
That's amazing. So I just can't imagine making those decisions, but neat. Neat. You can make some money that way, get a nice head start and have some cool real world experiences. All right. So, boy, let's try and say that 3 times so fast. Real world experiences. There we go. All right. So tell me a little bit about, you were talking about that now you teach teachers about finances. Mm-hmm. So tell me where that thought came from.
Well, in addition to being a teacher, I'm a personal finance author, so I've written 3 books. And so that's kind of where it stemmed from. My first book, How to Survive and Perhaps Thrive on a Teacher's Salary, that came out in 2007. And then shortly, shortly before that, when we moved from Florida to Georgia in 2006, I was at a new teacher hire orientation for Georgia, and 2 gentlemen presented, Dale Alexander and David Hatter. And I'm like, gosh, they talked about just basically like manage your money well, doing well in life. And I thought, that's what I want to do. So I made a contact with these guys. And then when my first book came out, I shared it with them. So then we started doing a couple financial roadshows, we call them, where we would go to school districts and talk to teachers after hours and just try to help them manage money. And in the meantime, I wrote 2 more books. And then just out of the blue this summer, one of them, Dave, called me and said he may have an opening at his company. So I interviewed and got hired. And so now basically our company, Invest in You, we kind of handle school districts' 403B plans. And I'm going to be the employee education part of that. So I will go to schools and talk to teachers and school district employees about managing money and how to do well, because I mean, I walk the walk. I did it for 14 years. My wife is still a second grade teacher. So, I mean, I know all about the TEKS observations, and I know about, all doing lesson plans and all those things. I kind of live that life. So hopefully I'll be able to relate to teachers and help them and show them that, you're in a unique position. Not many companies offer pensions anymore. So as a teacher, if you start off, say when you're 25 years old and you can invest what would amount to the cost of a Diet Coke a day, you do that over the course of your teaching career, you will retire and be okay. You'll have your pension, Social Security for most of us, depending on what district, but most of us Social Security. And then if you have that supplemental retirement account, your golden years can be what you want them to be. And it's not as hard as so many people make it out to be.
Oh, that's awesome what you're just talking about. Now, I got to say, as you're zeroing in on that because as little as a Diet Coke a day, which that isn't much, and some of us can get kind of addicted to that place, the little green place that likes to make the different sorts of coffees and stuff like that.
Yes.
Which it would be like 3, 4, maybe 5 Diet Cokes a day. Mm-hmm. being able to save some of that would what an impact. So I gotta say this before we go further. I mean, I love that first title, which, you know, how to survive on a teacher's salary. So when you talk about stuff like this with teachers, what are some of the reactions you get?
I would say lately it's been a lot better. When it first came out, it was shortly before the Great Recession. So people were still in the mentality of, you know what, I'm going to, even though I make 40 grand a year, I'm buying a $200,000 home because I got special financing. Right. They said I could afford it. But after 2008, when we hit a nosedive, that's when my message kind of resonated a little more with others, just because they were forced to live differently. They had to make that change. So then here's a real world example of someone that has been able to do it. And we still, I mean, when you look at my family's, you know, what we do, I wouldn't say we don't sit at home and just twiddle our thumbs. I mean, we live life and we have fun. But for me, and this is what I kind of want to instill in others, I look at financial fitness and being aware of your finances as ways to create opportunities for you. I'm never about, you know, buying the BMW or buying the big house. If you want to do that, that's fine. I have no problem with it. But for me, I kind of look at it as opportunities and ways to be able to do other things, perhaps, if you have some goals and aspirations. As teachers, a lot of teachers I know want to potentially move up and become administrators. Well, you know, if you can save some money, then you can pay for that master's degree or that specialist degree out of pocket and not owe student loan money. So it just creates opportunities for you. And that's kind of where I just try to hit with teachers that, you know what, if you can save, and even if you love being in the classroom, if you save a little bit every single month, then over time, you'll be able to retire and do what you want to do when you retire. If you want to stay on as a teacher, you get to stay on. But there is, I see right now, you know, at some schools, there are some people there, and I guess it holds true in any job, but don't really want to be there, but they cannot make the change because they can't afford to. And I think, what a horrible life. And when we teach kids, right, as teachers, find your sweet spot, go for it. And if you do that in life, you will be successful, even if you don't make a large salary, because no teacher went into the profession to make a lot of money. If you did, your professor lied to you, and you found that out very quickly. So, you know, we want to do what we're passionate about. So that's where, you know, I say, if you can just save some and build up that fund, then you're able to continue to do what you're passionate about. Because there are many teachers that leave the profession because the salaries are so low that they have to have another job to make more money to survive.
Right.
And that's, there was actually in my first book, and I don't know what it was, what it is right now, but in 2006, the National Education Association did a study, and 50% of teachers quit the profession within 5 years, and that was partially due to low pay. So that was part of my spark for the book, is just say, you know what, here's a way that you can stay a teacher and have a job that you enjoy, and you can still manage on your salary.
That's awesome. You said a couple of things in there that I got to mention. I mean, like, you know, the difference in times, obviously. I mean, the good thing is that we have teachers making $40,000 a year. They when I had a several different family members who were teachers, and they started off in the 70s, early 70s, late 60s, and it's funny because as a kid, I'll never forget, because I had this uncle, his name's Larry, and Larry was the prankster, you know, one of the pranksters in the family, and he was fun, all right. He was a lot of fun to be around, and I can just imagine him as a teacher. He taught junior high math. Well, I always remember one of the things that was really cool about Larry is that he drove a big truck during the summertime, and he had lots of Pepsi, and it's funny, until later down the road, there were two things that I'll always remember that happened during the regular school year. During the summer, he drove a Pepsi truck. And during the regular part of the year, he had a we could go find him in, and I want to say it was a Montgomery Ward's in Daytona Beach, Florida. You know, he'd go there. There was this mall, and he'd go there, and he was working in the camera department. Larry was really big on cameras, and he knew how to use them, and slide projectors, you know, before PowerPoint and all that
right.
stuff. And usually, you know, when you go over to his house, you always would watch his latest slideshow and stuff like this. And I'd go visit him there. Well, I didn't think that, I tell that long story to get to this point. I didn't think that the reason why he's doing that is because, you know, his salary was probably around $7,000, if that. And so he had to supplement it with stuff. And so what's cool is what you're talking about is being able to make it so that in these days, in terms of today's money, that they can, if they're smart with their money, they can have the lifestyle that they want. And that's pretty cool.
You can. Easier said than done. Absolutely. But you have to have a plan in place. But yes, that is it. In America as a whole, not even just in the teaching industry, we really don't have an income problem. We have an outgo problem. And I read a recent study that average American over the course of their working career will earn about $1.5 million.
Wow.
Now, I mean, that's over the course of a long, you know, 40-year career, no matter what you do. But I would ask, if you were the president of a company, would you hire yourself to manage it? And for a lot of people, they would say no. And that's where I think not even just educators, but society in general, we're going to have to get a grip on this and do a little bit better. And I think that's where I want my message to resonate, is that it's not that hard. I mean, basically, spend less than you earn. It's that simple.
Right.
I know the emotions get involved, and that's, you know, I think 80% of money problems are emotional based. It's really not to do with the math, but but that's where we do have to get serious. And I think as teachers, especially since we don't make a large salary relatively compared to others, hard to complain right now because there's many that are struggling. But you know, you do have friends that graduate from college and they start off making a lot more than teachers do. But we still make enough that if we're smart about it, we have a plan in place that you can do well financially.
That's excellent, because, you know, just like, you know, it's funny, before we started recording, we were talking, you know, you were mentioning the idea of some people and their priorities. And, you know, if you're working because you decided that you want to get, you know, a Lamborghini as a teacher, and you want to drive a Lamborghini, or, you know, let's bring it down into a little more reality. Maybe as a teacher, you're wanting to get the latest Camaro or something like mm-hmm. that, or Mustang. And even though it looks cool and all that sort of stuff, is that really what you need? Or should you be focused on something else? And maybe, you know, I think we even mentioned, you know, go to a used car lot and get something that's a little more recent, but is a used car, and you're going to own it within a short period of time. And then right. you can use that money for other things.
Well, as a whole in society, it's like, I see it, I want it, I'm going to buy it, and not think about the future ramifications of those decisions. But I mean, we learned it early on. Every action has a consequence. So you choose to go buy a car and you have a $500 a month car payment. Well, you're going to have less money to do other things. And then
right.
your job, no matter what job you have, I think that's when it becomes a little more difficult, because you're forced to be there to pay for your things. And like I mentioned, all of us got in, or most of us, I would say, got into teaching because we have a passion for it first and foremost. And I wouldn't want to take that passion away, because then if you make mistakes with money, then you're forced to be there. And then you just have a different feeling about your job when you're forced to be there, as opposed to you're doing what you want to do because you enjoy it and you're passionate about it. Two different mindsets. And I think probably the most effective teachers are the ones, or employees in general, are the ones that really don't have too much financial stress, because no matter what career you're in, if you have financial stress, that's kind of going, you're going to think about that most of the day. Just, it's overbearing, and you just right. think about that. So if you're free to teach how you want to teach, you know, and you don't have those pressures on you, then I think it makes you become a much more effective teacher.
Oh, I love that. That's, yeah, if you don't have those pressures. I mean, I've had friends who, you know, they're working to pay off. Well, I don't even know if they paid off. I think to pay the minimum monthly payment or whatever, as opposed to even paying off, mm-hmm. you know, what they purchased. So they're really working to pay that,
right?
And then make their tax donation.
And that's misery. It's the hamster wheel. Work, spin, work, spin, work, spin, work, and it doesn't stop. And to me, that's misery. And I know you drive now back to Atlanta. And me, when I'm driving into, well, not into Atlanta, but I have to take 85 and the traffic's pretty heavy. And there's mornings I do look around at all the cars. And I think statistically speaking, I think it's something like 70% of Americans are dissatisfied with their jobs. So when you look on the roads, you think 7 out of every 10 people don't want to go where they're going.
Wow.
That to me is misery. So you're getting up every single day and doing something you really don't want to be doing to support the lifestyle that is built on false pretense. So it's just kind of this revolving cycle. So that's where I just, you know, hopefully I can help people manage their money better so then they can pursue their career passions. And hopefully it's in teaching, but it may not be. Maybe it's something else, and that's fine. But if you are doing what you enjoy and what you have a gift to do, then life is fun.
That's so cool. That's, you know, and I got to tell you, and we were talking about this before, or off mic, for those of you who are wondering what I'm about to talk about, but the, you know, just the idea that when I became a teacher, you're not thinking about this stuff. You're getting your first job. You're just excited because you're getting ready to do, you know, if you're becoming a teacher for the right reasons, which, like you said before, if you thought that you're going to have, you know, make millions because you were, I don't know what planet you were on. But if, you know, as you're thinking about, as you graduate from college, you graduate from your program, you know you're getting ready to get your first teaching job, and you get that first job, and what happens is that they sit you down in a room, and depending on the size of the system, it may be with two other teachers, it may be with 100 other teachers, and they say, now we need you to fill out all this financial paperwork, and you're going, huh? Is this written in Greek? Because I don't understand what it's asking me. And then there's the tax forms and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, you've got this incredible topic that you're zeroed in on, especially because you had the experience of being, you know, one of the problems a lot of times is that when financial people talk to teachers, how's that? You like that, financial people? All right. I just created a whole new category for you. So for all you listening out there who are financial people, I'm sorry. Anyway, the point is that, let me get back on track. You know, my thought here is simply this, is that, by not having been a teacher, they often don't understand that you're focused on working with the kids. This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. And so these numbers over here and the stuff that people are asking you to think about aren't necessarily in your preview, unless, of course, you are a math person or that is kind of your, you know, the numbers cruncher and stuff like this is your thing. And so when you sit down and this paperwork is put in front of you, you may not necessarily be making the right choices.
Right. And many don't. And I will tell you, that's what I love about what I'm doing right now with Invest in You, is that we take some of that guesswork out, because it used to be, and I sat through a first teacher, work day, you're a brand new teacher, and then you have to select. They used to have, you know, like five different representatives from different retirement companies, and then you would have to choose, okay, which person is the best for me, and make an appointment, sit down and talk to them. And that's what I love about what we do now, is we take that guesswork out for teachers. We already have the plan in place for you. You take a simple questionnaire to determine whether if you're high risk, low risk, conservative, and then we'll put you in the right mutual funds that you can invest in, and it's automatic. In a 403b or a 457 account, money comes out automatically. The guesswork is taken out. A lot of invested in target date funds, so you don't even have to worry about changing them up every year. So I think that's, you know, the beauty of what I'm doing now, is that I'm helping teachers, because it used to be very similar to if you went to college, your first day of college, and then you had 10 history teachers sitting there, and you said, you have to take history this semester. Go pick which teacher you want to teach you.
Right.
You got to go interview them all. You have to pick which one's best for you. And that's what the way it used to be, and it still is in some districts, of how teachers manage their retirement. They have to do those choices. And they do it at the worst time. It's the first teacher workday. You're thinking, I got all these parents. I got to set up my classroom. I got to do lesson plans. Yes. It's just overwhelming. And you're not thinking about your retirement 30 years down the road. You're thinking about, how am I going to get ready for the first day of school, which is this Friday? And then, bam, years go by. You don't make that investment. And then we get to the point that we're in our 40s. We have nothing in our retirement account. And then we're forced to work later and longer, and we're not as passionate. So that's, you know, to me, is one of the joys of what I'm doing now, is that I get to see teachers be able to take that guesswork out and just help them. And that way they can ensure they've worked hard and gave so much in their lives, that to reward themselves when they're done with their careers.
That's too cool. It's funny. You just hit an image in my head, because I can remember, they did have electricity when I first started teaching. Okay, I just want to make sure I say that. But I can remember sitting there looking at some of this paperwork, and I'm asking people, and some of them say, "Well, I can't really advise you on how to answer this." And I'm like, "Well, can you give me some thoughts about this?" Well, sitting next to me was a guy who goes, "This is what I'm doing," and I'm thinking, I'm listening to somebody who I have no clue who he is, nor does he have any credentials. He's just gotten hired as a teacher, also, and he's giving me advice. And I went, "Well, it's better than no advice, I guess." So the irony of it all is that he wasn't exactly. Now, the money part, I think he was okay on, but the tax part was where I quickly learned that I needed to make an adjustment to my to the tax form.
Right.
But good thing is it didn't hurt me too badly. But, you know, and so that's, you know, it's kind of like, what's funny is that we always talk about, we want our kids to have good influences around them and stuff like this. Well, as a brand new teacher, sometimes what's happening is you're going in and you're going, I don't know how to fill out this stuff. This is not my world. My world is helping kids see the future. My world is doing this for the kids and all that. And now I'm being asked to do this other
right,
stuff.
Right. Right. It's true. And that was the way it used to be. So hopefully, you know, it's changing some, and we'll continue to make changes just to make it as easy. But it's just so, it can be very overwhelming and very confusing. And you sat through it. I sat through it. And, you know, we know some things about finances, and it comes hard for me. So I could not imagine just being someone that really has no idea whatsoever how confusing and how upsetting that would be.
Yes, that's too cool. It's you found a neat niche, and I got to tell you, there are a lot of people right now that are listening going, okay, what is this, 1-800-DANNY? In a little bit, I'm going to get, they're going to want to reach out to you. So let's shift gears just a minute. I want to go back to your books.
Okay.
All right. So you've got three books and you got one written by your daughter, right?
Yes.
So talk about your daughter's book.
Okay. So Ava, my daughter, just turned 10 in May. So last year she came home, and I will say she's a gifted writer. She won in Jackson County. That's where we are. In second grade, she won the Georgia Author of the Year for the entire county. So I saw, okay, she does have a gift. So last year she's sitting there playing on the laptop, says, "Dad, I need you to buy me a laptop." And I said, do you? And she goes, "Yeah, I need it." And I said, "Well, for what?" She said, "Well, to play Minecraft." I said, "Wait a second. I should work all day and buy you a computer so you can play games." She's like, "Yeah." I said, "No, that's not going to happen." And that just shows, even as frugal parents, society, kids are learning things. They want.
Right.
But I said, let's think of some ways that you can make money on your own. So we kind of thought outside the box. And I said, "Look, you're a really talented writer. I have ties to the publishing industry. Let's see. I'll ask my publisher if she'd be interested." So I did. She said, "Absolutely." So making a long story short, Ava kind of worked on it over a few months, turned it in, and September 1st, she has her book out, The Financial Angel, what all kids should know about money, ages 4 to 11. So it's been a neat experience for her, and she doesn't even realize it yet. Being 10, she's on radio shows, and she just doesn't see how much of a big deal it is. But what we're going to do now with the proceeds of this book, and this kind of shows how the magic of compound interest as well. When they've earned chores, both of my daughters growing up, we've always did in basic chores, but when they got paid, 10% would go in a giveaway jar, 25% would go into savings, and the rest was spending. So with this book, I said that we're going to do a little something different. We're going to still give away the first 10%. Then the next 10% I want to invest. And then we'll still put some in savings, and then you can spend the rest. And if you've earn enough, you can buy a laptop, you can buy whatever you want. This is your money. I could care less how you spend it. But if you give away first and you invest some and then you have some in savings, the rest, do whatever you want. Because if she goes out and makes a mistake, I would much rather it be, you know, a $50 mistake now than a $5,000 mistake when she's 25. Nice. But just so with the investing part, I even told her, and this is how magical it is. I said, let's just say some way, somehow you were able to come up with $250 to invest. Do you know if you invested it at 10 years old and you let it ride out until you were 70, that $250 would be worth over $75,000.
Wow.
That's compound interest. So, you know, we're doing some real world examples, and we actually, I think this summer, last summer I got paid to go do a presentation in Wisconsin at an Army fort, and he contacted me and wants me to come back up and bring Ava. So she has a cool experience. And I said, look, if you do a really good job and put together a good presentation, I'll give you the majority of the money, which is, it's going to be pretty good. I mean, for her age. So she's kind of seeing now that, wow, okay, there's a value. And if I can find a value to do in life and I provide a service, go a little bit above and beyond, then I should get rewarded for it. So that's kind of what, and I will tell parents out there, if you do have kids, and not every kid's going to write a book, and not every kid starts something when they're 10, but when they get a little older, whether they're 13, 14, a lot of them are very tech savvy. They could create their own app. They could dog walk. They could house it, whatever. But I try to think outside the box a little bit. And this is just, you know, kind of came up with us that she was able to write a book. And now I think, gosh, what a neat thing that even when she goes to college eventually, this is just going to be another notch for her. She doesn't realize how big of a deal it is yet, but it's really a cool thing. I'm really proud of her.
And you should be. It's so amazing. And just as a note, like here's a little sentence from it. The title of the section is called Spending. Spending is a very tempting thing to want to do. Most people spend money they know they don't have on items. Whoa, yeah, we just hit the nail on the head right there.
Right, and I've always taken a proactive approach with both my daughters. So I have Ava, who's 10, and Ella, who's 7. And we talk about money issues all the time. Like, I've discussed student loan debt with her. We've discussed credit cards and why credit cards aren't good to have. And it may be over. Some of it may be over her head, and that's fine. But I would much rather discuss too much than not enough. And I will say, as a former teacher, we do a horrible job of teaching financial literacy in our schools. So if you're a parent out there listening, you have to be the one to do that.
Right.
We see the whole Occupy movement, where we had kids graduating with $80,000 in student loan debt, major in English literature, and they can only find a job as a barista. We have to be different now as parents. It's no longer you go to college, get that degree, have the job, work 30 years, get a pension, retire in Florida. That isn't the case anymore. So as parents, we have to instill some values and habits and teach our kids, because the schools, most of them aren't doing it. So please, if you're a parent out there, just be proactive with this.
And you are right on the money, because you have to be, as a parent, that's part of your parenting, I would say, if nothing more, obligation to your children to help them figure that out.
Yeah, unless you want them living in your basement until they're 30.
Right, which that is usually not what most people want. I think that's a little bit about millennials, is that they're kind of like boomerang kids. They go out and they come back. And,
right.
That you want them to be able to develop that idea of how to deal with money, how to manage it. And the idea is just simply, because it's, one of the craziest things is it's a joke, but I actually have heard people say this: I've got checks, therefore I have money. Wow, that's a scary thing. Right?
It is. And if you don't teach them, there's other people out there that are ready to do it. They're friends in advertisements.
Yes.
So they're going to learn. They're going to learn one way or the other. So hopefully you want to teach them the right way.
Very much so, especially as, you got to love some of these commercials about cars lately. They don't really focus on the car. They focus on things like the Bose stereo system that's inside that car. And it's like, wow, you're going to spend $50,000 so you can get the special Bose system. You have no clue about the car, but
I know. I like that. I know.
What's really cool in your daughter's book is that we have driver's license, we have identification cards, we have practice, fake credit cards, and so forth and so on. And it's just a really wonderful book. And I got to tell you, at the age of 10, I was into Spider-Man and building models and spending the money more than
natural inclination.
Awesome.
So, like I said, we've raised, we're frugal parents, lived off teacher salary for 9 years. So they still, both of my daughters still want iPads. They want all these high dollar things. And that just really opens my eyes that, gosh, we have an uphill battle as parents, because it's a natural inclination of everyone, I guess, in general, to want things. We're bombarded so much. I think the average American, I read in American Demographics magazine, by the time you hit 21, you'll be exposed to like 25 million ads. It's crazy.
Wow.
But they do it for a reason. And here we come right now. You saw the day after Halloween, we saw the Christmas commercials. They started right away. Now, if you watch TV, at least every commercial, there's going to be one that's centered around gift giving. And so, I don't fault them. They make their money that way, and I totally get it. But we have to fight back, too, to make sure that our kids grow up and they don't go into debt. And then, they don't show those commercials fast forward 3 years after Christmas when the credit card bills are coming in and people are upset. So we just have to take the bull by the horns and teach it ourselves.
That's awesome advice. Awesome. I got to tell you, as we're one of the things that you have these three books that you've written. And the first one's How to Survive, which I love the little in quotes, not quotes, in quote, oh my gosh, in parentheses, and perhaps thrive on a teacher's salary, which is your first one.
Yes.
And then you have A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. And then A Bright Financial Future, Teaching Kids About Money Pre-K through College for Lifelong Success. So if you... can you do a little highlight on those last two books?
Yes. So A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom. My first book, obviously, was geared towards teachers. And I wanted another book that wasn't just geared towards teachers. I wanted it to be geared towards everyone. And honestly, I learned a lot from the time I wrote my first book to the second book, and just able to communicate a little better and just about our life. Because at that time, my first book was basically our story and how we lived up until we had our first daughter, so Tracy, my wife, could stay at home. By the time the second book came out, Tracy had been a stay-at-home mom for 5 years. We added another daughter to the mix, still living on $42,000 a year, my teacher's salary. Despite that, no debt except our mortgage, investing each month, an emergency fund in place, but most importantly, doing what we wanted to do.
Wow.
I liked teaching. She liked being a stay-at-home mom. We were able to make that work.
Nice.
So that book was an update on the first one, but just with more tips and more practical. And then the latest book is for parents or adults to use with children. And as a former teacher, I try to divide it into different age groups. So we have ages 3 to 5, ages 6 to 8, which is like the early elementary, ages 9 to 11, upper elementary, 12 to 14, middle school years, 15 to 18, high school years, and then 19 to say 22, 23, the young adult years. So specific advice, specific lessons and tips to teach each individual age group. So parents, if you had a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old, bam, you have two different chapters you can refer to, and here's what we want to teach right now, and here's some ways we can do it, and then just expand upon them as they get older.
That's awesome. as a father of two sons, one in college and one getting ready to be there, you want them to be able to be to be able to make good decisions with money, and to understand that you do have to save it, you do have to invest it, you do have to be wise and decide if, you know, and understand that, just like your daughter said, if you don't have it, don't spend it. And the idea that as much as the credit card companies would love to make you know that they are your friend, they really aren't when they want to sucker you into the idea of, oh, you only have to pay this little bit this month.
Yeah.
And obviously the real big danger out there, the debit card monster, which some people can really get themselves into some serious trouble.
Right. Well, yeah. And if you think it's a friend, here, I'll give you $100, but then you're going to have to pay me $124 back. That's what kind of friend they are.
Right.
So that's what, when you're charging 24% interest. So you just, you know, you point it out like that to your child, and then they can see, oh, okay, no wonder I get the free t-shirt, because they're making a lot of money off
right,
of me.
Right. I like that. That's got a t-shirt they spent a dollar on, and they, yeah.
Right. Nothing is for free.
Right.
I mean, it's a good lesson to learn in life. It may seem, oh, they're so nice, but no, they're not nice. They're making money off of you.
That's my money you just spent. Yeah, I like that. So as we're drawing to a close, mm-hmm. one of the things that I would like you to do is, first, I got to ask you another question.
Yep.
All right. This one has nothing to do with all that. In your background, as you came up as a kid through K through 12, was there ever a teacher that that made an impact on you, that if you had the chance to say thank you would? And if so, would you tell me just a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. Why I got into teaching, my ninth grade civics teacher, Mr. Stutzke, just was one of those dynamic teachers. And, you know, being in ninth grade, I didn't look forward to going to every class. Most ninth graders don't. But I never missed his class. I loved going there. And it was a civics class. So he taught us, you know, I guess basically we had a textbook, I'm sure. But what I most remember about him is anytime we had to talk, he had a motto, stand and deliver. So we had to stand up and talk. You're thinking at the time, well, this guy's crazy. What is he thinking? And now, as someone that goes out and gives professional speeches, and I think there's like 70% of Americans fear public speaking, I see what he was doing. He wanted to make it a little bit easier for all of us later on in life, that if we had to give up and give a presentation, hey, we were used to doing that. And then another thing that really was so neat about him is that he cared about us not just in the classroom. At that time, well, I played baseball. He would come to some of my baseball games after school, after hours, and come and watch me for a few innings. And that
nice.
Meant the world to me. So he is someone that after having him in ninth grade, I said, I want to be a teacher. And actually, I started off, I wanted to be a history teacher, kind of like that. Changed to elementary ed. I looked at the career options in history. Usually there's a couple history teachers in a county, whereas elementary ed, you know, the job opportunities are a little bit more lucrative. But no, Mr. Stutzke, he was just was an inspiration for me. So yes, definitely thank you to him. And he put the thought in my head.
Excellent. I appreciate you sharing that. And Danny, before we close, I just want to, is there any, how can people find you on the web and as well as the company you work for?
Okay. The easiest way, if you just Google search my name, Danny Kofke, so DannyKof as in Frank, K-E. Usually the first thing that comes up is my blog page, DannyKofke.blogspot.com. And on that, you can see all the links to some of my media appearances, order my books, email me, and a bunch of other stuff. And then my company, Invest in You, just INVES, lowercase n lowercase u.com, and my email address is dkofke@investinu.com. So if anyone wanted to get a hold of me, they could do it that way as well.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Danny, it's been awesome spending time together. I appreciate, boy, I just said the word awesome twice.
That's okay.
I'm stuck on that word. Okay. So I got to tell you, it's been wonderful talking with you today. I appreciate you making time. I appreciate you sharing all this information. And as a note, I just got to say, what you are, the world that you're focused on helping is it's a great area to be focused on, because speaking as one from the past, that I wish I'd had this information when I was starting off, and I know that many others are going to benefit completely just from, you know, starting off by listening to you now and then taking out and checking out your books and reading them and putting them to use in their own families.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for having me on and your kind words.
I appreciate it. You have an awesome day today, and thanks again.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes Store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.